Colleagues, welcome back to the office and welcome to our presentation for today. My name is Steve Yass, and this is our first CPE Today live webinar. And it's a pleasure to have you with me for our section today, which is Getting Ahead of the Technology Curve, Part 1. We're actually going to be looking at blockchain today, but this is a part of our series that we've been doing on emerging technology. Technology is one of those things that is so incredible, worldwide, all-encompassing, and developing. And it's just something that is constantly just improving our lives if we're looking for ways to be able to implement it. And in this series, we've been looking at some different technologies, whether they be blockchain tech, which is what we're going to discuss today, or next-generation communication technology like 5G or satellite or more. Or even things like cryptocurrency or robotics. You know, there's all these different techs that can have a huge impact. And hopefully in today's series, and you're going to learn some of the different ways that you can incorporate this technology into your lives and into your practices. So for today, what we're going to discuss is blockchain specifically. We're going to discuss both blockchain and cryptocurrency. For myself, I really feel that one of the most compelling things with respect to blockchain technology is the impact it could potentially have in things like logistics, shipping, contract negotiations, and more. It tends to be overshadowed, unfortunately, due to the rise of things like Bitcoin or Ethereum and others. We're going to definitely take a look at that, but I really want to give you an appreciation for where blockchain technology could be used in addition to the stuff that maybe you're hearing about on the news. We're going to start our discussion with a little bit of understanding of what technology trends are and why they are important, what we should be focusing on. And then we're going to go ahead and dive into that cryptocurrency and blockchain. I'm going to address, for example, the first part of this will be the blockchain misconceptions, giving you a bigger understanding, pulling back the lens a little bit further so you can understand where and when blockchain is appropriate. In fact, we're going to take a look at a couple of pretty interesting blockchain examples and logistic examples, for example, using blockchain to manage and track the supply chain for food. And we'll also talk about kind of the forecast of where blockchain technology could be used in the future. I'll do a little to discuss where cryptocurrency can be, but I really feel that that is more appropriate for a future podcast. So please stay tuned. Now, before we get going, I do want to remind you that today's broadcast is available both for live credit as well as self-study credit. This is our first live webinar, so if you're watching live, a big welcome and hello to you as well. And if you're watching after the fact, thank you for coming. You can earn credits for either watching live or taking a short quiz after the fact. Head on over to cpetoday.com afterwards. You'll find today's course. You take a short 5-question quiz and you will earn a credit. If you're here with us live, thank you for being here. Please note there will be some polling and review questions that are going to go ahead and pop up. Please respond to those questions as they pop up to track and confirm your attendance. If you're new to the channel and new to our podcast, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us. We have a special offer for you. Please head on over to cpetoday.com. Use coupon code podcast20 and receive 20% off your first purchase. So a great way to get some great education content to stay on top of your game. Alrighty, folks. So let's go ahead and dive into our first section for today, which is going to be discussing technology trends. Now, I always think it's important to discuss and understand trends when talking about emerging technology because so much of emerging tech is based around trends, and we can actually forecast and foresee where certain trends will be going into the future by just looking at what's happened in the past and seeing what's happening around us at the moment. Now, trends are so very, very important. And in fact, I personally take the opinion that not following technology trends is not an option any longer. You have to, because it can be absolutely deadly to your business. So, you know, there are plenty of examples of organizations that haven't followed trends. And, you know, I think you could probably all point to some examples in your particular profession or industry to get a good idea of companies that just kind of went by the wayside. I mean, think about, for example, Research in Motion, which made the BlackBerry, Kodak, which long dominated the film and photography space, or even MySpace with social networking, and more, you know? And these companies, at one point or the other, all dominated their particular industry, but unfortunately no longer exist. And I really view that it is because they didn't pay attention to changing consumer expectations and didn't really kind of follow trends. Well, I could tell you that in the context of today's environment, you know, your average S&P 500 company has a lifespan of less than 30 years. Certainly, there are plenty of examples of companies like IBM or Ford or Chevrolet, but think about how many new companies that dominate the major markets like Google or, and others. Even Apple's a relatively newcomer, or Microsoft, you know, they haven't been around for hundreds of years. You know, if they're not constantly staying on top of it, what hope do the rest of us have? Now, good news is there's a pretty cool chart that we could use to understand where and when emerging technology might make its way out. There's this company called Gartner that puts together this kind of really cool chart annually and a report called the Gartner Hype Cycle for Emerging Tech. And the hype cycle kind of discusses some of the major aspects of technology and where it is in its particular lifespan. It starts with the innovation trigger where, you know, the scientist, the inventor comes up with an idea, and it finishes the plateau of productivity. And with the plateau of productivity, what that's really saying is it's discussing the different tech that has essentially made its way into mainstream. And with the different tech that's made it into mainstream, you know, these are going to be the technologies that we've just come to know and appreciate. You know, as an example, all of us today have some sort of smart device. You know, it might be a smartphone. Well, at some point, that was kind of a wild idea, even though it seems so commonplace today. There are some really kind of competitive and incredible technologies that are going to be coming up in the next couple of years. You know, whether it be, for example, 5G internet, artificial intelligence, bring your own identity, adaptive AI, and so much more. Not every one of these are going to be applicable to you and your organization, but it is useful to at least acknowledge them for what they are and to pick the technologies that will probably have an impact on your profession, and at least understand what they could do. And if it's something you don't want to incorporate, great, not a problem. But, you know, you should at least acknowledge them so you don't get left by the wayside. Now, I've picked out some leading emerging tech that I think is important to at least just acknowledge, both in the physical space as well as in the computing space. Now, in the computing space, from my perspective, for upcoming technology, it's really data and artificial intelligence driven, with all the different kind of sub interests below that, including things like machine learning and others, and deep learning and other computing technologies of that. I think an organization that is listening and processing its data effectively are going to be the organizations that are poised best for growth. Your organization should gather as much data as it possibly can and process it, because that's where you're going to find those little hidden gems. Stay tuned. We have future podcasts and webinars on leveraging and processing data for financial professionals. So we'll be doing some specific courses on that in the future. Certainly, blockchain and cryptocurrency, which is the focus of our conversation today, cognitive computing, bots, you know, bots are everywhere, essentially automation and robotics. Quantum computing is kind of a far off topic, but you know what? We might see that in our lifetime. You know, and quantum computing is a completely different method of computing. It's not, it doesn't use transistors in the traditional sense. It's not ones and zeros. It's this whole idea of qubits and superposition. And I mean, it has the opportunity to help us solve some massive big data problems that traditional technology just frankly can't resolve for us. Now, on the physical world, on the hardware side of this, on the display side, quantum dot technology, 5G, which is connectivity, LiDAR, okay, which is a radar technology using light, 3D printing. I mean, it's incredible what we can do with 3D printers and CNC machines now. If you're not familiar with this technology, basically it's a normal printer in the sense that it makes something, in the same sense that, for example, you would have a printer that would print paper, but this takes a polymer, it takes wood, it takes metal, it takes even potential human skin, flesh, and bone, and can print something from nothing. You know, there could very well come a time from a manufacturing perspective that maybe you're not actually making things, but sending plans to your customers, and they're printing them from home. Other major tech here, certainly things like virtual reality. I recently got married, and a dear, dear, dear friend of mine gave me a Oculus Rift for our wedding. And it's incredible. If you haven't experienced it yet, the immersive 3D nature of it is really compelling. And you could travel the world without having to leave your house. Certainly robotics. You know, I immediately Boston Dynamics is what comes to mind with respect to some of the incredible stuff that they're doing for building these humanoid style and you know, dog style robots, which are really kind of cool. It's certainly going into robotics, drones, self-driving vehicles, and more. It's really an incredible time to be alive. So why embrace emerging tech? I've given you a lot of reasons here to kind of consider this. Well, let's just kind of drive this point home. Not doing it can be very disruptive to your business. You could lose a competitive advantage. Inaction absolutely can cost you time and money. And I would say also opportunity. That's probably one thing that money can't necessarily buy is opportunity. And missing out, you might not be able to make that up at some point. It's incredible to think that Apple didn't necessarily create the smartphone. Okay, it existed in plenty of other devices around the world with other manufacturers. But when they released their iPhone, regardless of what you think of Apple as a company, it completely changed expectations for consumers. You know, Research in Motion, RIM, could have been that company, but they weren't. They missed that opportunity, and that's something they'll never get back. Innovation allows for new opportunity. It could be either incremental or potentially even revolutionary change for your business or industry. And I can also tell you that data will lead you to the direction of the innovation and growth that you should go to. There are plenty of companies that have been disruptive that have made a huge impact on the world, so much so that even sometimes the names are synonymous with the purpose that they do. You know, how many of you, for example, have gotten an Airbnb and traveling into a new destination instead of booking a hotel? You know, how many of us, for example, reach for our cell phones to book a Lyft or an Uber instead of calling a cab company? You know, those two examples have completely revolutionized consumer spending in terms of where and how we choose to spend our dollars. On a bigger side of this, companies like SpaceX are completely shaking up traditional industries like space travel and defense with bringing the cost down sometimes 10x or more. All right, folks, let's go ahead and have our first review question for our presentation today. So if you're following along at home, please just go ahead and think aloud to yourself. And if you're with us here live, please respond to the polling questions that displayed on the screen. Which are the benefits of embracing emerging technology in your organization? So what could you get? Opportunity to reset the clock of your business. I definitely think that is something that could help. Opportunity to quickly gain a major competitive advantage. You betcha. That's something that could definitely help your organization. Opportunity to reduce costs and improve efficiency. You betcha. So correct answer here is all of the above. Perfect. Let's go ahead and get into our next section here and talk through some blockchain and cryptocurrency, getting a sense of where these technologies can be useful potentially to our organizations. Alrighty. So the best way of kind of thinking about blockchain in general, first and foremost, think of it as a ledger. Think of it as an information system for storing data about something. I mean, it could be something about, like, let's say supply chain and logistics. It could be information about CPE credits that you've earned at your favorite CPE provider. It could be money. It could be contract information. It could be whatever. Blockchain is just a way of storing and exchanging information. It's just a more, let's say, democratized way of doing it. It's a way where people throughout public blockchains, and I'm talking specifically about public blockchains here, are all equal. You know, regardless if you're, you know, a Warren Buffett size investor or you're just a Steve Yass, just a normal dude. Okay, so with blockchain, it's a way that we can exchange information between people, and information could be of any type: money, business plans, logistic info, whatever. Now, why use blockchain? I mean, if you think about it, there's so many great existing technologies. What does this have to offer that makes it, you know, that much better that I would want to use this compared to a competing tech? Well, let's talk about this. Well, if you think about existing technology and existing exchanging of information, almost everything is using this idea of a trusted middleman. Let's use the idea of like going to your favorite ice cream shop and getting two scoops of peanut butter and chocolate. Okay. Well, I go to that ice cream shop and I hand the merchant cash. Great. I've just essentially paid him directly, but increasingly we're not living in a cash centric world. What am I normally going to hand this person? I'm going to hand this person a credit card. The merchant takes it to their point of sale system, swipes the credit card, charges me the $5 for the ice cream. And let's think about the next step. Let's think about the money exchanging. Okay. Well, if let's say it's American Express, American Express gets the charge. They want to double check, make sure it's not fraudulent. They see that it's an authorized charge, you know, that their security algorithms, everything kind of shakes out and looks good. And what do? Well, they move money from one account to the other. They take $5 out of my account if it's a debit card, or they place a $5 charge on my American Express account if it's a credit card, and they will then move the money, less a reasonable fee for their services, over their different ledger systems, depositing it into the merchant of that ice cream shop. And what do? They get that, they get those bank service fees, those credit card discount fees. And they're essentially that trusted middleman that's used to process a transaction. They sit between me and the ice cream shop. They do all the heavy lifting with moving money from one to the other. Okay. Blockchain replaces that trusted middleman. Instead of using American Express or Chase or whomever, we instead use public blockchain technology, allowing me to connect directly to that ice cream vendor, where I essentially, if we're using cryptocurrency as an example here, I'm essentially handing them cash in the same way that I would traditionally pull out a greenback and hand them some cash in person. The fees, the time, the trust, all of that are greatly improved by using technology like blockchain, you know, because essentially it's a lot cheaper, a lot faster, and, you know, anybody can participate and get involved. It's not like credit, for example, where I got to go and, you know, ask a credit card company to give me credit or go to a bank and get signed up. I can get signed up immediately and start being able to use this. So in a nutshell, blockchain allow the consumer and the supplier to connect directly. Instead of going through a trusted middleman, we use a trusted central technology. In this case, we use blockchain. Now, a core principle of blockchain technology is cryptography. Okay. Encryption is such an important part of everyday world and everyday life. It's pervasive. It's everywhere. It's everything that we tend to use. It's what keeps our cell phone calls, for example, private. It allows us to be able to log into our favorite social media platform without somebody stealing our password. It allows us to process a credit card transaction and more. And blockchain has cryptography at its heart. Within blockchain, everything is stored in a decentralized database and ledger, but the actual transactions themselves in terms of the processing are all done under high cryptography standards. So it's a very, very secure way of exchanging information with low risk of someone intercepting that transaction and stealing. Okay. Now, on the same time, it's also very public too. In the context of a public blockchain, okay, and I'm using that word very consciously here, all aspects of a public blockchain transaction, date, time, address, these are public things. You can look up anybody's account and see the actual transactions if they're transacting something in Bitcoin, Ethereum, or more. So it's both secure and also public, which is kind of interesting. And that can be a pretty competitive advantage if you think about it. Now, all transactions, once they are committed to the blockchain, it has to be approved by all users. This is what we call the consensus protocol. So when you process something inside a blockchain, it's held to those strict cryptography standards. And assuming those standards are kept, meaning that the transaction is valid, you know, that, you know, using Bitcoin as an example here, that Steve actually has a Bitcoin to trade and you have a valid address to receive it, well, it will process. And then all the users look at that transaction to ensure that it meets those strict standards. That consensus protocol will ensure that only valid and syntaxfully correct transactions are committed to the blockchain. Now, another central principle of blockchain is, whether it is public blockchain like a Bitcoin or Ethereum, or private blockchain like Hyperledger Fabric, a central principle that I would say is probably one of the most central principles of the overall technology itself is the fact that it is immutable. And once something is committed to that blockchain, it's permanent and it can never, ever be edited or modified or removed. And it's actually not possible to remove a transaction because if you remove one transaction, the cryptography standards of this no longer line up. It is no longer in a valid sense, stable. So it won't work. It'll reject that transaction if you try to modify it. Now, let's get some facts straight. You know, I like to talk about getting on the same page with respect to blockchain because often what people think it is and what it actually is, I think are not always the same thing, you know? And unfortunately, I think what often ends up happening is that, you know, they hear news stories and they think that's the whole technology, and that's just not the case. Okay. Blockchain's a lot more than just Bitcoin or Ethereum. Okay. And that's really what we're going to talk about and focus on are these business use cases for this incredible technology. So all cryptocurrency, like Bitcoin or Ethereum, is blockchain technology, but not all blockchain is cryptocurrency, okay? So with respect to this, you know, we have lots of examples where blockchain is being used in contracts, insurance, logistics, supply chain, and more that have nothing to do with the price of Bitcoin or Ethereum, okay? So there are plenty of examples and organizations that are using blockchain technology that do not involve cryptocurrency. So that is not the whole story. Now, at the same time, though, if it is a cryptocurrency, it has to be blockchain based. So not all blockchain is cryptocurrency, but all cryptocurrency is blockchain. There are lots. In fact, there are thousands of other blockchains besides the big ones that you've heard, like Bitcoin or Ethereum. Blockchain technology is more than just trading cryptocurrency. It has lots of real-world applications, and we're going to take a look at a couple of examples here, specifically one that's being used inside of Walmart for tracking supply chain for fruit and perishables, and then we'll also take a look at an example using where Maersk is using it to track shipping containers. Okay, and not all blockchain is public. I mentioned this a little bit, but let me mention this. You have public blockchains. Okay, Ethereum, Bitcoin, anybody can participate. Anybody can get into these things. Anybody can do whatever they want. Essentially, it's a big worldwide distributed network of disinterested people. But there are also private blockchains, which are internal company, where a company, for example, might want the benefit of blockchain technology, but they don't want all the headache of being public or frankly using something that's tied to an arbitrary value. You know, they just want basically the permanence, they want the security, the cryptography standards and that kind of stuff, and they don't want any of the other headache. Okay, so, and then we also have kind of a hybrid where it could be a provision blockchain where it's public, but you can let people in if you just so desire. And there's many different shades of gray in this, okay? So depending on the needs of your organization, you might need public, you might need private, you might need some sort of mix of the two. So let's talk about where blockchain is needed. So where can this technology actually be helpful beyond the scope of Bitcoin? Well, here are some of my thoughts. I think blockchain could be really super useful if you need a way of storing information in a tamper-evident ledger with time stamps. So think about this. I want to be able to store something. I want to know if anybody messed with it, like changed the numbers. And I also want to see the sequence. I want to see the number, the date, the time, whatever, in terms of how that information is being stored. So with that tamper-evident ledger, I'm going to know if anybody changed anything. I'm also going to know the date and time of certain actions that occurred. This could be really useful for like agreements, insurance, contracts, and more. I want to be able to put a contract out there, know that you didn't change the terms of the contract after I extended it, and I also want to know that the contract is actually valid after the fact, okay? For example, if you've ever done like a DocuSign, a HelloSign, an EchoSign, Adobe Sign, any of those electronic contracts are things that could really benefit from using blockchain technology because we would be able to store that contract, that agreement that we both signed in the blockchain and then be able to recall it at any point in the future. And because it is essentially neutral ground, it's in the middle, we know that we can rely on the information in that somebody didn't, with malice, change it after the fact. Okay, blockchain can be really useful where parties don't know each other and they need a way of trusting each other and having a forensically unalterable, tamper-evident way of storing data. Okay, so think about this. Let's say I am a U.S.-based company and I'm looking to do some manufacturing overseas, and I don't know anybody there. I'm looking just basically to get started, and I'm worried about, you know, are they going to steal my intellectual property? Are they going to fulfill on my order? You know, there's a lot of money potentially and a lot of heartache and hassle in terms of getting overseas stuff created. Blockchain could be really helpful. It could let manufacturers, common carriers, purchasers collaborate with secure protocols to validate that their company can meet the obligations. There's this topic, which we're going to save for a separate podcast a little bit later on, called smart contracts, which are programmatic contracts where if all parties do what they say they're going to do, the contract will fulfill, and if it's something like exchanging money or information, that will happen automatically, which could be really helpful when we're trying to do business and we don't necessarily know the people we're doing business with. So if you don't know somebody and you need to do business with them and you want to have a way of storing information and knowing if it's been tampered, blockchain could be your friend here. A third, places where sequence of records are important. Everything inside of a blockchain occurs after the thing before it. So if you go and you looked at Bitcoin, you could literally see every single page, every single transaction in that ledger going back to the original transactions in there. Where can that be really useful? Again, real estate, deeds, titles, liens against assets, things like this, where I want to know essentially where the different things have occurred and when they occurred. And this could be really useful, for example, for title. You know, if you've ever purchased a property, at some point you will have had to go through title. And the whole point of title is to ensure that the person who is selling you the property can actually do so. And man, can it be a huge issue if you buy a piece of property and the title isn't cleared? Okay. Well, if we have blockchain tech, every piece of parcel of property could be assigned a specific record locator. And from there, we could actually double check to ensure that that particular property is free and clear. At the moment, there's no clear and concise and consistent way nationwide, let alone worldwide, where you can do that. And especially outside the United States, title isn't necessarily something that is easily or cleanly kept. This could really be helpful with understanding our physical world and who owns or who is responsible for different pieces of property. Now, another big central principle of blockchain is going to be the fundamental nature of how it's designed. Okay. Now think back to the traditional method, that trusted middleman. Okay. Think about that word there, middleman, middle. Middle means centralization, right? So if we think about the traditional method here, there's always something in the middle. You know, Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, whomever, they sit here in the middle. Or it could be like a normal business, you know, that's doing businesses, you know, with lots of other companies, but, you know, that essentially is in the middle, maybe between a larger group of transactions. Again, middle. So everything tends to be in modern world to be centralized, and there's a lot of benefits to that. But at the same time, that's also not what the problem blockchain's trying to solve. Blockchain is about decentralization, and it's about distributing the information and democratizing the information to as many parties as possible. So in the context of public blockchains, I'm not talking about stuff that you could do internal to your company, but the public, the major blockchains here, they are both decentralized as well as distributed. There is no one single responsible party, single point of authority, single point of management operation with respect to, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum. There's not an Ethereum Inc. that you can go to, or a you know, Bitcoin LLC that you can potentially sue. These technologies are stateless. They exist because they exist, which is kind of interesting. And I will point out the technologies themselves kind of came out in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. It was originally designed by a guy named Satoshi Nakamoto. And I'm using the term guy very loosely. We actually don't know who Satoshi Nakamoto is. It could be a person, it could be a group of people, it could be a he, a she, I don't actually know. But what they didn't like was the fact that in the 2008 financial crisis, that a couple of banks, through bad policies, could essentially tank an entire world economy. And so they wanted to create something that was not going to be subject to the same constraints that we see in traditional fiat. And fiat is a term that we use for traditional money markets in the same way. So they built the blockchain technology to be decentralized, meaning there's no one single point of authority. Anybody can participate and has equal standing as anybody else. And they also built it to be distributed so that the responsibility, the information, the processing, all of that would be shared amongst the people who actually use it. So in a nutshell, what you can understand with public blockchain, the management, oversight, operation, everything is essentially done by the users who actually use it. It has power because people use it. In the same way that there's not gold backing up every single dollar we have in circulation today here in the United States, it's the faith in currency, the faith in good nature of the people who actually use it. The dollar has power because we believe it has power. And it's also backed up by the federal government. In this particular case, Bitcoin, Ethereum, none of these public blockchains are backed up by anything, which is also kind of a risk as well. Now, we have transactions, we have blocks, and we have blockchains, okay? So a transaction is an individual transaction between parties, and there are millions of cryptocurrency and blockchain transactions that are occurring every single day, sometimes every single hour, depending on the specific technology. Now, think of the traditional way that you would do bookkeeping. Remember those green books that you used to have, and you know, it was a ledger book, right? And so it had lines, it had columns. You'd write down the transaction, you'd write down the date, the time, and essentially, you know, you'd at the end of the day maybe have a whole column, you know, a whole list, a whole page of transactions. Well, that's what a block is. A block is like a page in a ledger book, and that page represents a series of transactions. A block represents a grouping of transactions. So it's like an individual page of the overall ledger. That actual book of transaction, that's the blockchain. The blockchain itself is kind of like all of it. It's essentially the whole kit and caboodle with respect to all transactions going back in time. So individual transactions get processed into a block. The act of settling a block is what we refer to as mining. In that particular instance, when it's finally settled, what we end up doing here is committing it to the actual blockchain. And then it's permanent. It's there. It's never going to be modified or edited. Now, as I mentioned, and I alluded to a little bit ago, they're both public and private. Public blockchains, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, so on and so forth. Anybody can participate. Anybody can get in. All users are independent. And in fact, if you're a miner, which is the process of settling these transactions, you can even have a full copy of the transaction history or the ledger itself, the full blockchain. Now, private blockchains and hybrid blockchains are a little bit different. Private blockchains, users are not independent. You have to have permission to engage with the ledger, and they are typically provisioned for a specific purpose and have oversight by a specific organization. It might be a company, might be a consortium of companies or more. Now, to think of a traditional cryptocurrency transaction, a Bitcoin transaction, here's an example. Bob says he's going to go buy some equipment, and you know, he decides he contracts with a company overseas and he buys some equipment for one Bitcoin. That used to not be so dramatic, you know, but now with the current price of Bitcoin, that one Bitcoin is probably close to $70,000. So I mean, that's a pretty sizable piece of equipment, I guess. Well, and they decide that instead of using dollars or RMB or yen or whatever they choose to use, they're going to use Bitcoin. So Bob opens up his wallet, which is basically exactly what you think it is. It's a digital collector of cryptocurrency. And Acme would provide their wallet address. And just like Bob would ACH something or charge something by credit card, Bob would type in the account for Acme and select the amount that he would like to send from his wallet. Okay, when he does that, that transaction is immediately executed and it's sent to the public blockchain for verification. So that transaction is then added to the block. That block is then sent out for processing to the overall blockchain. And it's broadcasted out to every miner in that actual network. And the miners are the ones who actually settle the transactions. It's the people actually using the technology. It's not a central middleman in this case. It's the whole network that is using this. Now, who are these miners? Okay, well, mining is the process of settling transactions. So we still got to move money from column A to column B. We still have to track where things go. One of the cool things about blockchain is that literally the whole thing is always in perfect balance. It's designed to be in balance. And miners are the people who actually do the processing. They're the ones who actually move stuff from column A to column B. Okay, so miners themselves are independent. They're worldwide. They're disinterested. And they're the ones who will process the actual transactions. Because of the design of this, you know, it is not possible, for example, to have miners that are committing fraud. It just isn't. You know, there's just too many of them. Collusion is not a really big risk with respect to Bitcoin. It's not entirely out of the realm of possibility, but just given the size and scope, it would be very improbable. Now, miners will use the system data that is presented to them in the form of that blockchain transaction, and they will process this. They essentially are settling these transactions group by group, and those transactions themselves are held to very kind of strict standards. They have a specific envelope type and, you know, format and so on and so forth. And if that transaction doesn't meet those specific standards, it's actually discarded. It's not processed. Now, initially, transactions will be verified by a single miner, but over the next couple of minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, that transaction will be verified by thousands and then potentially even millions of miners worldwide. And once verified, that block is then added to the chain. That chain is a permanent, non-editable, immutable, transparent record of every single thing that has ever occurred in that public blockchain. Now, private blockchains can work a little bit different than this, but the general principles are roughly the same. Now, once that transaction is verified lots and lots and lots of times over, you know, the vendor might, for example, say, hey, we're not going to do anything until it's verified at least 100 times. You know, that transaction is then settled. Acme would see their Bitcoin balance increase, while Bob would see his Bitcoin balance decrease correspondingly. And once Bob has sent that Bitcoin to one person, he can't send that same Bitcoin to another person. It's not like he can go Xerox it and try to pass it off as somebody else. It doesn't work that way. And the system is in perfect harmony. It's always in perfect balance because it's not mathematically possible to be out of balance. It's designed to always balance out. Users will store their Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever public blockchain cryptocurrency they're using on a wallet. That wallet can be accessed from any device connected to the internet. And you can, if you know the wallet's address, actually examine the transaction and balances occurring for that particular wallet. All right, so let's pull back the lens a little bit. What does this mean to us as financial professionals? Well, in a lot of ways, it's pretty cool, man. I mean, like, if you think about it, from an auditing perspective, you can actually verify the data behind the financial statements if there are more blockchain-based transactions. You'd be able to see both the, you know, start and the stop of that transaction, A and B, 1 and 2 of that actual transaction. This would be really useful for tracking transactions between entities, you know, because everything would be verifiable from one side or the other. It'd make things like auditing really simple. It would also provide a really good integrity of electronic record keeping because all changes are permanent and irreversible. Now, at the moment, there is no commercially viable accounting system that uses blockchain as a fundamental tool, but that might change in the future. And if it does, that permanence, that immutability, that in fact that nothing can be edited, modified, deleted, or changed from an accounting perspective, man, wouldn't that be great? All right, folks, let's go ahead and have our second review question. All right. And if you're following along, please go ahead and respond to the question. What is the process of settling transactions and moving funds from one account to the other called? Is it staking? No, that is not the correct answer here. Staking is a different method of settlement. But it's not the one that we actually talked about here. Staking actually goes back to another topic, which is called proof of. You have two different methods of managing transactions: proof of work or proof of stake. And unfortunately, staking is not widely accepted yet as the settling of transactions, at least not in the context that we're talking about here. Is it blockchain? No, that's the technology itself. The correct answer here is mining, okay, or proof of work, if we wanted to be a little bit more specific. So proof of work, is the current method for settling almost all transactions, certainly with Bitcoin being no exception. All right, folks, let's go ahead and talk through a couple of examples of where blockchain can be used inside of business. And the example I want to lead off with here is utilizing blockchain for supply chain. Okay. And let's take a look at specifically the food supply chain. Okay. Now, food moves through a very antiquated, super old school process that has frankly been around, oh God, probably since the dawn of time. You know, since forever, there's been farmers growing things and, you know, ranchers raising things, bringing them to market and selling things to people. You know, in the old way, where you probably bought something from a neighbor down the street or at a farmer's market was probably pretty safe because you know where your food was coming from. But increasingly in today's environment, we don't know where stuff is coming from, you know. And in fact, the federal, the Food and Drug Administration only requires one step forward and one step of backward traceability. Okay. So from a merchant's perspective, the food that they're selling to you, they only need to know where they bought it. They don't necessarily, and they're not required to know the farm that that food was raised on or where that particular grove or orchard that fruit was picked or whatever else. And increasingly, again, we live in this big global world where information and is very high speed now. And then also our supply chains are very fragmented and very diverse. It is completely reasonable to think that you could be eating strawberries that were grown thousands of miles from where you currently live in the middle of February, as an example. Unfortunately, this has caused issues, and there can be some serious real-world health issues. In 2019 and 2020, the world faced a couple of different outbreaks with respect to E. coli. Here in the United States in 2019, I want to say, 53 people in 16 states were affected through a major E. coli breach. Unfortunately, and it was through a wide number of farms, it was through a wide number of distributors, we couldn't actually figure out who the heck was responsible and where this was coming from. Tracing the origin of this stuff takes lots of time, thousands of different documents to kind of piece it together, and even then it's not super accurate. And at the end, for that outbreak in 2019, the CDC could not identify a single supplier, so we ended up destroying all romaine lettuce for that particular outbreak, which was like something absurd. Several million heads of lettuce were thrown away. All right. So nobody likes seeing food destroyed. Companies certainly don't like seeing profits being thrown down the toilet either. So enter blockchain technology. Okay. Walmart. Okay. Your friendly Walmart store, one of the largest companies in the world, probably the largest retailer in the world. I know Amazon's certainly large, but I don't think they have near the footprint that Walmart does, decided that they wanted to do something about this. So Walmart has over 12,000 stores, tens of thousands of suppliers. It's not like they just buy tomatoes from one company or, you know, pomegranates from one company. Certainly they work with all the big boys, you know, the Driscolls and Tysons and so on and so forth. But often they're working with a lot of smaller providers as well. So they came up with their colleagues, okay, Dole, Driscoll, Tyson, Nestle, Unilever, and others, the food safety blockchain. Okay, so this is a collaborative effort across multiple different companies where they said, hey, let's figure out how can we use this blockchain technology to track stuff as it's moving through the supply chain so that if an outbreak occurs, we can figure out where the heck the size and scope of it might be. So up to this point in time, they've actually conducted two different tests. So they did a test on mangoes here in the United States. They did a test on pork in China. Now, they decided to go with a private provision blockchain or a essentially just a non-public blockchain. This isn't something they're trying to do for investment or anything else like that. They wanted to do something that would essentially allow them to manage the information and the size and scope of the technology. And so they went with a technology called Hyperledger Fabric. It's part of the Linux Foundation. Major companies like IBM and others have been a part of it for a long time. And what they decided to come up with was a blockchain with 6-character lot numbers that were assigned to all the different things in their supply chain. And then, you know, once it has that particular lot number, any Walmart employee can go and punch it in on a local computer in the store and can trace the origin of that particular item from farm to table. Regardless of where that product traveled, who handled it, where it was in that particular, you know, blockchain world, you would be able to see step by step from the point of being picked for a mango or the point of that hog being raised for the pig, for the pork. You could track the origin and the provenance of that particular item. So here's some results. On the mango pilot test, previously it would take Walmart almost a week, 6 days, 18 hours, and 26 minutes to trace a package of sliced mango using its existing text and paper-based methods. Well, after implementing this new blockchain system, that time went to 2.2 seconds. I could say that would be a pretty good improvement overall with respect to speed and accuracy. I'm sure it was pretty accurate as well. So in this particular example, I think it's a no-brainer where this technology really clearly added a major benefit to the company and it solved the problem they were trying to do. Now, there are other tests which occurred in China, 100% accuracy with pretty much the exact same speed, seconds from where it used to take hours and days and sometimes even longer. So as an example, this is what it would look like if that Walmart employee were to punch in that lot number and see essentially what that, you know, what that entry would be for that particular item. So let's say you've got the mango here. We'll use that as our example. I punch in the lot number. Okay, it would pop up. It'd say mangoes, 10-ounce Tommy variety, cultivated, you know, for transport. Harvested April 24th in Osaka, Mexico. April 25th, underwent a hot water treatment to exterminate any potential invasive bugs. April 27th, an importer received the shipment. It passed through Customs and Border Protection on the 29th and entered a U.S. processing plant in Southern California where it was sliced on May 1st. Okay, it then moved to a cold storage facility in Los Angeles. A few days later, it arrived at your local Walmart store. Safety inspection certificate was available at the click of the mouse, and they could even track that all the way to the customer purchasing that particular lot of sliced mangoes. So what did this solve for Walmart? Okay, well, it helped overcome a number of problems. Antiquated technology that is pervasive and prevalent throughout the entire grocery supply market, pretty common, especially for markets that sell things, retail, food, so on and so forth. I mean, these industries have been around hundreds, if not thousands of years, and they've largely operated the same for that entire time period. Volume, okay? Your typical food store in Walmart exceeds 50,000 items, okay? That's a ton. How could you possibly be able to keep an eye on that when you have suppliers and retailers and wholesalers and every other type of business at every other step of the way? It's a lot of many to many relationships, and that's just inherently difficult. Supply chain management through blockchain could really improve that overall operation. Those many to many relationships where a supplier has many customers, you know, and a customer might buy from many suppliers, manufacturers straight from the farm. That's a lot of logic to deal with. Now, future omni-channel supply chain where people will purchase any kind of produce from anywhere in the world and have it delivered to their door. Increasingly, we're dealing with the DoorDashes, Uber Eats, Instacarts of the world. It's only going to get more complex. You know, having solutions like blockchain in place can help at least mitigate and bring this to a more acceptable risk level. Let's take a look at one more example of where blockchain is being used in organizations. So Maersk is a shipping giant representing a statistical significant percentage of all shipping worldwide. They ship containers from the United States to Europe to Asia and really kind of everywhere in between. So they did a similar study to Walmart where they wanted to see how blockchain could potentially help them in their shipping and logistics business. And so they did a study where they tracked a container as it was moving from Kenya to Rotterdam. And amazingly, what they found out, over 30 different entities were involved and over 100 people touched that particular container as it moved. In this case, it was avocados from Kenya to Rotterdam. That's a lot of cooks in the kitchens, you know. So if we could essentially better manage that information, we could potentially provide better insight to our customers and maybe even discover how we're processing these transactions so that maybe we could reduce our touch points. They also found that over 200 elements of information were necessary for that exchange of container. So, you know, from the customer to Maersk, Maersk to the, you know, certainly the immigration and customs people, the customer, so on and so forth. Lots and lots and lots of traditional manual processes. Likewise, they use that Hyperledger Fabric product and a private blockchain. So in addition to Maersk, they got DuPont, Dow Chemical, Tetra, Port of Houston, Port of Rotterdam, U.S. Customs, and other people to be involved to give it a go and see what would happen. And that blockchain project gave them a complete view from a single dashboard of the progress of goods as it moved through the blockchain, the location of that transit, that container in transit, and also automation of the bill of lading through the customs system. Now you might think, well, how could they already do this with an existing database? And the answer is yes. But often it would be that existing database from a company and you're using it the way that specific company wants you to use it, you know, and often we're thinking about systems and integration of different systems and systems of systems working together. In this particular instance, we have a neutral third party, okay? And that neutral third party is providing a fair playing ground that all different types of organizations, whether it be the customer, the vendor, the supplier, the government, or more, can rely upon the information presented in there. So ultimately, I think we have a very bright future with respect to blockchaining. Let's take a look at what it might look like going forward. I would say people are excited for different reasons. Banks, IT professionals, accountants, customers, vendors, and more. There's many different reasons to be excited. I would say central banks and investment banks are kind of interested in where cryptocurrency might go because it opens up a new investment opportunity. There's this whole idea of stable coins, which are cryptocurrency assets backed by a nation's fiat currency. And, you know, so think of like a digital dollar in a way. Stable coins are expected to become pretty common, especially in countries where currency, hard currency, can certainly be an issue. For example, in Venezuela, as well as in Afghanistan, hard physical currency is difficult in today's environment, given the political nature of that country. Crypto could be a little bit easier for them. Lots of regulatory issue. SEC, FINRA, IRS, and more have to figure out essentially how those issues are going to be navigated. So be careful. Your organization or you might want to be involved, but there could be some specific things that you need to think about with respect to the laws and regulations before incorporating it. Now, some early adoption stuff that I'm watching and some ideas where I think crypto could be and blockchain could be really useful. Anything around real estate, I think, is pretty interesting. There's some pretty exciting demos and trials occurring in the province of Ontario in Canada, as well as Manitoba, country of Sweden, Republic of Georgia. Here in the United States, Cook County, Chicago is evaluating it. Maersk and IBM have created supply chains for shipments. I think that could be super useful in the future. Hyperledger, that product is continuing to grow and get adoption, and certainly sponsored from the Linux Foundation, has really helped essentially gain some traction. Now, to summarize this, at the end of the day, I think, again, bright future. I think there's a lot of things that can happen here. And I think blockchain technology are really kind of cutting edge technology that are in their infancy. You know, I would tell you, think about what you thought about the internet in like 1996, 1999, 2001. I mean, I think we all knew it would be something. I don't think we all knew that it was going to be how big as it is right now. In the context of this, I mean, just think about how incredibly widespread the internet is. Not just technology, but the internet specifically. I mean, it's how we communicate. It's how we conduct business. It's how you're listening and watching me right now. In fact, it's changed the way our relationships work. A lot of people, myself included, found their loved one and spouse through online dating that could have only been possible through the means of the internet or through the pandemic, connecting through social media and video chatting and connecting with our friends on Facebook, Instagram, or even a Zoom room and more. I'm going to say blockchain and crypto are long-term technologies. We're 5, 10, 15 years out, but I think mainstream adoption is kind of an inevitability in some respects. And I think if properly implemented, these technologies have the opportunity to change the world. So it's not something for today. it's something for tomorrow. Think about it in the context of how the internet has changed. I think about it in the context of how like financial markets have been changed, you know, through, I think that this could really kind of have that same impact in the sense that how the internet has changed communication markets, cryptocurrency could change those financial markets. It could be huge. But it's important to know it's volatile, it's speculative, it's constantly changing, but it's also constantly improving. There's lots of improvements that occur every single year. And there's new technology that's coming out every single year. So from the cryptocurrency side of this, please do your own due diligence, your own research, understand what you can do and what you can't do and what would be a good move for you or not. And on the blockchain side of this, find ways of maybe potentially incorporating private blockchains for managing your information and providing a higher level of trust and security of your data. All right, that does bring us to the end of our presentation today. Let's go ahead and have our final review question and then wrap up. All right, if you're following along, please respond to the polling question. Which blockchain platform was utilized for both the Walmart and the Maersk pilot projects? Was it Bitcoin? No, it was not. Okay, was it Ethereum? No, it was not. Was it Litecoin? Nope. The correct answer here is Hyperledger Fabric. Hyperledger Fabric was the tool that they use, and it allows them to have a provisioned private blockchain where they can control the flow of data in and out. So in today's class, we talked about different ways of incorporating cutting-edge new technology inside of our organization and why trends around technology are so important. We also then dove into specifically looking at blockchain technology and cryptocurrency technology. And within blockchain, we took a look at some real-world examples of where and how blockchain technology can be used today. Now, I'd like to continue down this road. And in fact, for future episodes of our blockchain for business, we're going to go ahead and take a look at some specific public blockchains, Bitcoin, Ethereum, IOTA, and more. And we'll also take a look at some of the provisioned private blockchains that you could use without having the headache of a fluctuating thing in price. We'll also take a look at some other emerging technologies too in our emerging technology section, AI, big data, robotics, and more. The sky's the limit. Now, I do want to remind you, if you are watching live today, as long as you've responded to at least 75% of your polling questions, you will receive full credit. And if you're watching after the fact, this is a self-study product, please consider purchasing your credit for today and earning another CPE credit to keep your license. Today's course code is BBB1. Head on over to cpetoday.com and use that course code, and you can earn a credit for today's class. Besides podcasts and live webinars, we've got tons of other products and of all different types of education from accounting, audit, tax, and more. You can find whatever you need to stay competitive in your career. In fact, if you're a new listener, thank you for being here. You can get 20% off your first podcast by using coupon code podcast20 at checkout. If you enjoy our content, please consider subscribing and following us on social media. You can find us just about everywhere at CPE Today. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more. Leave a comment. Let us know what you like. And consider subscribing to the CPE Today podcast wherever you happen to get your content, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and more. We'd love for you to leave a review. That really helps us spread the news of the channel and help us gain additional listeners. It's been my absolute pleasure being with you here today. Thank you so much for your time and attention. I look forward to seeing you back in the office the next time around.